Amen. And a happy All Saints Day to you, brothers and sisters, children of God, people of LCC, and beloved guests, sinners and saints. Now, those of you who have been walking with us this summer and fall will know that I've been talking about this book of Luke during the season, while uplifting the journey that Jesus is making from Galilee to Bethlehem. And it's really quite a long journey that he's been making through the summer and through the fall. And even though they don't say how long it takes for him to go from Galilee to Jerusalem, it's really not that far. If you look at a map, Israel is really tiny, tiny. And it really, we're talking a matter of maybe 40, 50, 60 miles, maybe 100. I'm not sure of the exact amount, of the exact distance. But it seems like Jesus is taking his sweet time getting to Jerusalem. And I'm inclined to believe that it might have taken him 6 months to go from one place to another. So while we've been sitting through it, he's been sitting through it. He's been walking through the length of time, visiting people and teaching people. And so we don't get the benefit during the season after Pentecost of Jesus' entry into Jerusalem, because we celebrate that on Palm Sunday, which happens before Easter. So guess what? Jesus is there. He made it into Jerusalem, and here this Sunday we're talking about him having met with the Sadducees, these priests, these elite aristocratic class of people. And this is an opportunity Jesus has to educate them about the nature of the resurrection. You see, as we read in the passage, the Sadducees don't believe in the resurrection. They believe that after you die, you die, and that's pretty much it. And so there's a lot of anxiety that they have when it comes to end-of-life issues that might paint what they have to say about it. And in fact, they're not really interested in Jesus' answer to their little game of words. They're really only interested in trapping him. Even as far back, though, in our first reading in Job, we read about how the writers of Job understood that there was a physical death that would be followed by a standing before God. And so even in older Jewish literature, there is something that is clear, that some of these people that wrote understood that there was a resurrection. But the people who are the Sadducees, the people that we call the Sadducees, and were people that only accepted the Pentateuch, which is the first five books, and the rest is just all literature of some kind or another. Maybe helpful, maybe not. And their interest with Jesus is to trap him into saying something that is in contradiction to stuff that he had been saying before. But Jesus has so much to teach them. And so their absurd little imagination game oversimplifies the nature of what Jesus is talking about when he talks about the afterlife. This idea of marriage, this marriage that something goes beyond death, even when people are remarried, is not something that follows through with the Christian understanding, the understanding of the resurrection that Jesus has been teaching. We are all equal in God's eyes. And what we are in God's kingdom is not something that is governed by earthly laws, whether they be laws that take place in the union of two people in a temple or before the court. And then Jesus upholds the fact that once one lives in God's kingdom, one cannot die anymore, implying that there's Jesus is implying that, yes, there is a first death that might take place. And to drive the point that there is scriptural truth to the resurrection, Jesus uses the stories that the Sadducees are quite familiar with. This illustration of the burning bush. It takes place in Exodus, one of the first five books of the Bible. So Jesus is using stuff that they consider the honest to God scriptural authority. God uses these words when he speaks to Moses. I am the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob. God speaks not only using the present tense, but God is talking about people that, well, in Moses' time, they had already died. We've already read that they died. So why is God saying, I am the God of these people? As if God is not a litany of dead people. God is not a God of a litany of dead people. Like he's some kind of underworld king. And in Jesus' time, we had enough mythology that was going around and all the people that they came into contact with. Probably the most notable would be Hades, the Greek god of the underworld, or also known in Roman as Pluto. But Jesus is saying this is not who God is. God is not this god of dead shades, but he is the god of the living, the god of the burning bush, the god who took the people out of Israel. And that Abraham and Jacob and Isaac are all people who were very much alive in God's kingdom, not dead. The Sadducees, in asking Jesus this question about death, betray their own hearts. Because although their intent is to entrap the Lord with a thought experiment without a solution, they underscore this fact that, like so many of us, they're frightened about death. The thought experiment seeks only to create this absurd set of circumstances that nobody can follow. This absurd set of circumstances, the wife that marries seven brothers, and what happens to the marriage after the death, which one of the marriages is the legitimate one. But it highlights that their fear of death is a final death, an ending without a continuation beyond. Who can imagine what does that feel like if that's what death is, the very end of all things? What I heard somebody say this morning, what is the point of life if that is the meaning of it, if that is the end? And we today like to avoid conversations about the end of life. And it reminds us that we're not so different from the people of Jesus' day. We like to say these Sadducees, ha ha ha, they're really bad people. But in fact, they're still people that thought and used logic very much like we use today. That despite the fact that we have faith that there is a coming kingdom, we don't like to speak about death for some very good reasons. Because we fear to voice the 600-pound elephant skeleton in the room. We fear that by acknowledging death, that we give it power over us. That we will lose yet more friends and family to its finality. That our loved ones will be taken from us and that we will never be able to have lunch with them, to go walking in the park with them, to watch a movie with them, to call them on the telephone, text them, send them Facebook messages, tag them in pictures, attend parties with them. Whatever we did before with them, we would never be able to do again. And indeed, for many of us, I think that our own death is much less scary than the prospect of losing people we love. And maybe that's because we have so much experience with having lost people we love. That the idea of losing them is a rather concrete one, whereas the thought about our own death is something that's more ephemeral. And so I think that's one of the reasons it's easy to not make plans about those eventualities. What's going to happen after my death? Now, I've got one of those blank documents that I've got at home that the doctor asks you to fill out that you need to have in case that they put you on life support. What's the name of that? Does anybody know? Living will. Living will. There's a, what did you say?
DNR.
There was another term for it. I can't.
Advanced directive.
Thank you, Erica. Advanced directive. I've got one of those advanced directives that I've got sitting at home blank. It's probably just a matter of me filling in a few things, checking a few boxes, and then I can turn it in. I've avoided looking at that. I've got I've got a notice from the insurance company that I need to finish. I need to put down. They need more information for my life insurance. I have avoided doing that. Because I don't want to think about my death. It's easy not to think about my death. I have years and years of life left in me. I like to think, even though I'm going to turn 50 next month, that I still might have another 50 good years after me. I might get to live to be 100. That is wonderful. And I might still only be in half, might have only had half of my life so far. And yet, it only takes one mistake on my motorcycle at the exact wrong time, not looking for a moment, one car that I'm not paying attention to, doesn't have to be my fault, it can be somebody else's fault, I might only be not paying good enough attention. And so it's why I buy more safety gear. Why I learned to be more careful. Why I quit smoking so many years ago. Why I watch my weight. Take my cholesterol medications. Take my other medications for my heart. Why I watch what I eat. Why I try to get back into working out. So I can extend my life as long as humanly possible. You know, my grandmother died at the age of 92. I'm two generations past her. I could theoretically live quite a bit longer than that. You know, if the laws of each successive generation living longer than the previous one apply. And we're living in such a wonderful time that science advances people's lives longer and longer than ever before. And yet, there is one certainty in life, my sisters and brothers. Well, maybe two if you count taxes. Death will happen. You will lose friends to it. You will lose family to it. You will lose people you love to it. And you will succumb to it as well. Each and every one of us. No one escapes it. But therein lies the good news, my sisters and brothers. And because what Jesus tells the Sadducees, he tells each and every one of us that once we have met death, it has no more power over us. Jesus has claimed victory and won our souls from its icy grips. Jesus has taken the power of the grave, and we yet live beyond. He has destroyed death, that we all find new life in him. And it makes me wonder how fortunate we are that we are living to be this day and age. You know, I was thinking as I was writing this that All Saints Sunday always happens the first Sunday in November, because All Saints Day is November 1st, which means that every year, the following Tuesday is Election Day. And considering how much anxiety we have in our lives about death, I'm willing to bet that most of you have a lot more anxiety about what's going to happen this coming Tuesday. And so we might consider those that have left us the lucky ones. That they have no more worries in this world, because they do. They have no more worries. And they are probably looking down on us and laughing and say, guess what? It all comes to the same end. And so instead of worry and strife, at least about death, we can share with them in their faith, knowing that the saints who have left us recently are finally secure in their peace. No fear of having to make their ends meet, whether it be finding, being able to buy that trip or being able to buy those things that they want to buy or being able to find where they're going to be sleeping tomorrow. No more fear or anxiety of who the next president is going to be. Job security, their well-being or their health. No more fear or anxiety because it's all covered. This is full coverage. 100% God's coverage. When Jesus calls us home to his kingdom, all of our anxieties are gone. All of our fear is laid to rest. Today, let us be secure in the knowledge that no matter what ails us, what perplexes us, what confuses us, what bedevils us, what gives us anxiety here on earth, we can be secure in the promise of God's heavenly kingdom. And today we can proclaim this good news that God's kingdom is for us, for all of us today. Amen.